Dead panites. Give me some Tomy, baby.
Hey, this is Jack Mangan's Deadpan, number 10. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. the shark that Fonzie jumped over. The theme for this episode is community. It's cool to be a part of this big community full of friends and cool people. Lots of content this time around. We're going to talk a little bit more about that community. But we also have to round up our deadpan research. We have an interview with Mer Lafferty and lots of other great content. So let's just get right to it. What do you say?
Hey, this is Mike Nelson, and you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Keep it tuned here.
So when T. Morris interviewed me, we talked about community and how we're all kind of in this together. Because, you know, life is hard and the world is full of assholes who want to make things rough on everyone. So what we're just trying to do is just be a fun community of people just helping each other get through. And that's what it's all about. So on that note, thank you to Brad P. for his donation to Deadpan. You rock. And here's another example of the way community is very cool. RK from New Zealand was kind enough. He said that he loved my song called Love Is Never Distant. And he said it reminded him of a band called Opeth, who I had never heard of. So based on his recommendation, I went and checked them out. And this is a very good band. And they tend to get kind of heavy at times, in all senses of the word, but it's a very good band. And I'm completely enthralled with what I've heard of Opeth. So, I mean, this is a way the community has gone back and forth. And thank you again, RK. Thanks. You gave a donation a while back. Thank you for that. Thanks for the interest in my song. And thanks for introducing me to Opeth. And more on the community thing are deadpan contributions from listeners. So let's go ahead right now with a double shot of stolen lyrics. The first from a pillar of our community, Alvian Boulder.
Hey Jack, it's Alvy with a bit of that gangster noir, Eazy-E, Boys in the Hood. He yelled out fire, then came Susie. The bitch came in with a submachine Uzi. Police shot the bitch but didn't hurt her. Both upstate for attempted murder, cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your card. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, I ain't said shit. Peace out, Deadpan.
This may not be considered rap, but it's that milkshake song by Kellis. I can see you're on it. You want me to teach thee techniques that freaks these boys. It can't be bought. Just know, thieves get caught. Watch if you're smart. La, 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 la. Warm it up. La, 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 la. The boys are waiting. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I can teach you, but I have to charge. Oh, once you get involved, everyone will look this way, so you must maintain your charm. Same time, maintain your halo. Just get the perfect blend, plus what you have within. Then next, his eyes are squint. Then he's picked up your scent. La la, la la la. Warm it up. La la, la la la. The boys are waiting. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I can teach you, but I have to charge. Is it just me, or does this sound like a song about someone who raises bloodhounds and runs an ice cream cart at the same time? Maybe that's just me.
Thank you, Chris Fisher, for contributing that. And also, you heard her at the top of the episode, giving us the... Well, let's hear it again.
Deadpanites, give me some Tomy, baby.
Deadpan thing, I think you move me.
Getting a leg up. Shake out the blue sound of the shogun. Shake out the blue sound of the shogun reigns through blue waves. Getting a leg up brings you the sounds that you need. The sounds that you want. The sounds that you desire. Getting a leg up. Brooklyn blues man. Reigning shogun of Taiwan. The blue shogun. Yeah.
My chair and I welcome you back. Okay, in episode 9, the JMDB research team discussed commonalities between the Dukes of Hazzard and the original Star Wars films. We'll conclude their report this week with 15 ways the Dukes and Lucases could have shared elements and thus improved their franchises. For Dukes of Hazzard, number 1, replace Cooter with Chewbacca. Number 2, the Dukes needed to face some Tusken Raiders. Number 3, get the General Lee competing in a pod race. Number 4, 2 words, Darth Enos. Number 5, Daisy Duke dancing for Jabba the Hutt. Number 6, a turreted laser cannon on top of the General Lee. And number 7, Bubba Fett. For Star Wars, number 1, Darth Vader should have done Roscoe's laugh at least once. Number 2, Darth Vader's TIE fighter needed a big Confederate flag on the top. Number 3, Tom Wopat frozen in carbonite. 4, Jedis with huge belt buckles. 5, come on, Yoda needed a banjo solo. 6, replace Luke's land speeder with the General Lee. 7, Star Wars also could have benefited from that narrator, like the Dukes had.
Right about now, them old Duke droids found themselves in more trouble than a Jawa covered in grits wandering into the Sarlacc pit.
And finally, in summary, what both franchises needed most...
You ignorant simp.
Well, Deadpan listeners, here we are with my very first female interview. Yay! It's someone you all know very well, probably, especially if you're a longtime Dragon Page and Michael and Evo listener. It's Mer Lafferty. How are you, Mer?
I'm doing well, thanks, Jack.
So tell everyone and tell me, you know, what's new? What are you focusing on these days?
I'm focusing on... Well, there's my two podcasts that I've been doing for a while, which is Geek Fu Action Grip and I Should Be Writing. I'm working on developing the podcasting track at Dragon Con and the Parsec Awards, which is going to... They're going to be the first awards given to sci-fi audio, or podcasted, rather. So fandom and fiction and stuff like that. We're going to be recognizing that. And I am forever doing the trying to get fiction published thing, which I know you're familiar with.
Right.
I have one novel that's done that I'm trying to tweak to make perfect. Yeah. And I've started another one.
Okay.
And lastly, Tricks of the Podcasting Masters, which I co-authored, comes out this week.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, you know, this is going to air... You know, in a few weeks, so it will be out then. And
Great. It's out now.
And that's available. Go ahead, yeah. plug away.
Sorry. I was about to tell you that it looks great.
Oh, cool.
No, it's available online, Amazon, in stores, major bookstores, minor bookstores perhaps. Yeah, and it's more of a podcasting for the right brain, like once you have all your gear... And you know how to, you know, where to plug in everything and how to turn on everything, how to make your podcast actually be good.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I should read that then. and now you have one in your hands then. So it does look very cool then. It does look good.
Yes.
Oh, well, congratulations. That's excellent.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about how you got into this business. And, you know, you're definitely, as you just proved, you know, you're definitely a big name in this, that you're behind all of the podcasting stuff at Dragon Con, including the Parsecs. I mean, Where are Mer Lafferty's humble beginnings in? Well, I mean, you can even go back beyond podcasting because, you know, I know you're a longtime gamer and, you know, you have a long life interest in this. So go ahead, you know, feel free to delve back as deeply into your rich past as you want.
Oh, well, I was a closeted geek in high school and didn't realize it until about senior year. And it was such a relief to come out. and not worry about the high heels and the boys liking me as much, and just concentrate on, you know, being myself and liking what I like. And once I got to college, I started getting into computer games and D&D. And a friend of mine, I was an English major, and a friend of mine just happened to teach me HTML in 1995.
Okay.
1995, a friend taught me HTML, and back then, it wasn't being taught officially. So when a company found out you knew HTML, you were a hot commodity. So I went from coffee bar barista to HTML developer. Okay. Pretty quickly. And then, you know, I went into, got hired at a computer game company to do their website, and I did that for 4.5 years. And that was pretty much one of the best jobs ever. And then I got laid off, and that sucked. But I took that as an opportunity to start freelance writing.
Okay.
So then I started writing for role-playing games. And one of my biggest questions is everyone wants to ask how I got involved with that, and I always feel like I'm disappointing them because, honestly, it was I knew the right person at the right place in the right time because I knew somebody who was getting out of the computer, the RPG industry, and he still knew a lot of people, so he just recommended me to somebody, and it all worked out.
Okay. And can you drop names or even just tell us the company that where this first RPG job that you had?
I worked on a mage book for White Wolf.
Okay.
I worked on Dark Ages Mage. I did a chapter in that book. And then I did Dead Magic 2, which was a lot of fun to work on. And since then, I've worked on mostly White Wolf stuff. I've done some 2 Exalted titles. Mostly World of Warcraft.
Okay.
I've done a lot of World of Warcraft, which has been... just a lot of fun, because I've loved the games ever since, you know, I started playing Warcraft 2, and just writing the RPGs was just, you know, getting really into the world, which, you know, as a computer gamer, I just didn't care that much about. You know, it's like, blah, 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 backstory, click through, go kill.
Right.
But with the RPGs, you know, I had to learn a lot more of the history, and Blizzard has done a hell of a job building that up. So...
And this is your chance to spotlight, because I guess probably, I don't know, I mean, I didn't know until you had told me. I know a lot of people probably don't even realize that there is a tabletop, you know, D20 RPG for World of Warcraft.
Exactly, yeah. It's in its second edition. The first one was just Warcraft, and then when World of Warcraft came out, we did a second edition called World of Warcraft. The first one's officially D20, the second one's Open Gaming License, which is D20 without the D20 name.
I see.
And... I think it's a lot of fun. My gaming group has played it, so I may be a little biased because I wrote on it and then I played it. So, but
sure.
But I think it's fun. And then I heard about podcasting in October of 2004, just from a friend of mine, and decided that that was something I wanted to do because I'd always been interested in sound, but just never really got into it.
Okay.
And this was my opportunity. So. And then I launched Geek Foo in December of 2004. And I used it as an outlet for my essays, which are unsurprisingly a bit of a geekier nature than most essays you'll read, and therefore not really publishable in, say, The New Yorker. So, and NPR just does not return my emails. I'm serious. They don't even send me rejections. They just, you know, it just goes into some black hole of NPR-ness. So...
Right, we're beneath them.
Yes.
Now actually, if I can just jump in, if you don't mind. Now, so these essays, then, they existed for a while before you got into podcasting, or was it as a result of you said, okay, I want to get into podcasting, let me create content?
No, they existed for a while. I was writing, like, girl gamer type column essays for GameGirls.com since 97.
Okay.
And then I started working, writing for Grumble Magazine, which is an online magazine.
Okay.
And in the beginning, a lot of, you know, when I couldn't write an essay for that week, I would go to Grumble and grab one from my archives and just read that.
Okay.
And then I exhausted that, so then I had to come up with an essay every week.
Oh, I see. And so the early Geek Foos then were actually Grumble. They were actually just taken from your Grumble essays.
Several of them, yes.
Okay, yeah, all this interesting trivia here. Where I first heard of you was, of course, with the Dragon Page. Now,
yeah.
How did you hook up with Evo and Mike?
I was driving down the road in February and was listening to the Dragon Page. They didn't even have a name for it then. It was their new podcast-only show.
Okay.
I can't remember what they were going to call it. I wish I did. But anyway, it wasn't winging it yet. Mm-hmm. And they just started talking about how they wanted to turn it into a variety show and they wanted to feature people's contributions. And then they started talking about me. And at this point, like, Michael and Evo were still, you know, they were on the radio and they did this fantastic sci-fi stuff and they interviewed all these famous authors and they were just like, don't tell Evo this, but yeah, like he's not listening. Yeah, don't tell Evo, but they were just these rock stars and they start talking about me. I nearly drove off the road. I was freaking out.
That's cool.
And I wrote Evo an angry letter saying, could you please not try to kill me next time and maybe send me an email before you start talking about me in your podcast? And so then they just said they wanted me to contribute, and so that's how that started.
Very cool. You know, I'm sorry I keep jumping in. This is your time.
No, that's fine.
But I've heard the similar story, but from Evo. He said the same thing, that he was just thought the world of you, thought you were just so amazing. And he said, you know, when you were interested, he said that he just couldn't believe it. He was totally floored. You know what?
You're kidding me.
Yeah, that's what he said. He was completely, you know, he was completely enamored of you too. You know, in a professional sci-fi sense.
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
But, you know, I'm going to edit out that comment about the rock star thing, though. I mean, God, they're going to take that and run with it. No, I'm just kidding. Well, so that's cool. And this is the last time I'm going to friggin' take over and hog your own interview. But I've got to say, when they asked me to start doing something, you know, started with Duel of the Fates, it was still really only, you know, you and TD0013 going.
Mm-hmm.
So I really felt like you guys were so good and just so creative and so witty, and I just had a lot to live up to. And so it really made me strive to make Duel of the Fates, you know, the best I could make it. So.
Oh, wow, great. That's awesome. I love Duel of the Fates.
Oh, well, thanks. So now you've definitely grown a lot since then, right? You've got, okay. I should be writing. You've got, like you said, and Geek Foo has continued. So let's talk talk a little bit about, you know, where it is now and, you know, where you want it to go.
Well, it was interesting. You listeners probably, if they are Dragon, or excuse me, Michael and Evo listeners, they are, that's hard to do. It's been over a year saying that,
okay.
That I haven't contributed in a while. Evo recently asked me to contribute something to Slice of Sci-Fi, and he gave me a specific essay. A couple of months ago, I just froze up because I went to, last summer, I took a CD of my essays and handed them to the editor of a magazine that I love, which is Knights of the Dinner Table, which is a role-playing game comic book / magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hysterical, and it's so wonderful. And actually, Ken Newquist, who is also a podcaster, writes a column in there. And just, you know, going up to him, and I said, you know, if you ever need another writer, I do essays, here they are. You know, this was probably one of the only places I could ever send a geek essay.
Sure.
And so Jolly looks at it. He's like, oh, yeah, sure, great. And, you know, the next month I was hired. So I had this put my monthly essay requirement up to 9. Because 2 a week plus the Knights of the Dinner Table one. And after 2 months, somebody wrote me and said, basically told me that I'd kind of repeated myself in a KODT essay. And that just, it killed me. It froze me. I'm just like, oh crap, this is the one I'm getting paid for. And I'm repeating myself, and suddenly it's like, I couldn't think of anything to write about. I felt like I'd exhausted all of my geek topics, and suddenly I realized, I gotta focus on the one that pays. So that's why I haven't been doing a whole lot with Michael and Evo lately, and that's why I turned to serialized fiction for Geek Foo, which is something I started last fall, just deciding to throw a couple of my not published, but I still thought they were pretty good stories out there.
Right.
And response was good, so I decided to, just for the hell of it, just decided to start writing a serial fiction for podcast only, and not like a drama, just a story.
Right.
And so now Geek Foo is more focusing on that story,
feel free to talk about that. Go ahead and plug. That's Heaven you're talking about, right?
Yes, it's called Heaven. It's about two friends who die in a car crash and go to heaven and realize that it's not quite all it was cracked up to be. Because this is something I'd always have a problem with, you know, like you're... Mm-hmm. Say your grandmother dies and your grandfather remarries and you're sitting there as a little kid thinking, well, gee, who's grandpa going to be with in heaven? Is he going to be with grandma or is he going to be with Miss Nancy? Or and just weird stuff like that. And of course, you know, everyone, the Christian overlords say, you know, oh, it's always perfect. Everything's wonderful. But just my logic could not wrap around that. So what if I'm in love with somebody and I go to heaven and he's not in love with me? Is he going to be my heaven? And if I'm not his heaven, what heaven is he going to have? So that kind of brought up the fact that my heroine realized that, you know, when the hero says he loves her and then they get married in heaven and live together, suddenly it's not real. And okay. So she and the hero decide, he realizes his heaven's not real either, and so they decide they're going to wander the afterlives. So they leave heaven and they start wandering, and the first place they go is the Elysium Fields of Greek mythology, and they have a little adventure there. And the podcast I just uploaded last night was when they left Elysium and went to the dog heaven. Okay. But you know, it was fun because a lot of religions say animals don't have souls, so that didn't take any research at all because I just made all that up. So
it's a lot of fire hydrants everywhere.
Yes. So. A lot of dead carcasses. A lot of live squirrels.
Right. Well, that is very cool. And now it is nice. It's good as an author, you know, to sort of redefine yourself. I Should Be Writing was based on, you kind of made a tongue-in-cheek joke about it, how, you know, I'm not really getting published, so let's talk about getting published.
Yeah.
And maybe there would be an old school notion of, oh, well, that's the only way they can get out. But, you know, you look at Scott Sigler, who's a huge success, and he had a lot of the same obstacles that we've all faced in the beginning, you know,
right,
getting published, and, you know, he just did it on his own, and now he's a huge success. You know, I've heard a lot of great feedback about what you're doing out there, so I think it's absolutely a great way to go, and, you know, more power to you.
Thank you. I've been pretty excited. I think about, you know, publishing your fiction in a zine gets you maybe 100 eyes, or publishing your fiction on a blog or something gives you, you know, maybe the same amount, but for some reason podcasting is so hot right now. You put your stuff out there and thousands are listening.
Right. That's where Geek Foo is now, is on the
yeah.
fiction. Do you want to focus more on that? Tell us some more about that, or you want to talk about I Should Be Writing?
Well, I Should Be Writing is the one that's close to my heart.
Okay.
And I don't understand why, because Geek Foo often gets a little bit more personal into my personal life, but being that writing and the ever-present quest to get fiction published is so much a part of my life, and a lot of people have told me how much I Should Be Writing means to them, because, you know, you've got Mike Stackpole and now Tracy Hickman out there being the mighty New York Times best-selling authors telling us how to do it, but still some people say it's nice to have somebody from the trenches saying, you know what, I did it, I got rejected, and I'm still doing it, I didn't let it beat me. And I get a lot of good feedback like that. A lot of people saying, you know, after listening to you, the excuses that I come up with for not writing now just don't seem to really hold. And
right.
that means a lot to me. So it's going pretty well. I do three episodes, and then I do a fourth episode where I interview a published author to make sure that the fact that I'm an unpublished author giving advice to other unpublished authors is not just, you know, blowing smoke out of my ass or something. Or is it smoke up your ass?
I think smoke up your ass somehow has come to mean some kind of flattery, which I don't really get the metaphor, because I don't really find that very flattering. So I think, yeah.
Anyway, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like I'm not talking bullshit. So I try to get a published author on the show every fourth episode and just ask them questions based on the previous three episodes. And that's been pretty cool. I've gotten some really good people. Again, Tracy Hickman and Mike Stackpole have been on there. I had Minister Faust, he's got one novel out, but I read it and was so floored by it. He was the first person I interviewed who I was really a fan of. And that was the nervous interview right there.
Well, cool. Yeah, he was a very hot name, especially when that book came out. I haven't read the book though. It's good.
Oh, it's fantastic. Are you a role player?
Yeah, it's been a while. You know,
you ever been?
Yes, I definitely know the joys of rolling a natural 20. Yeah, I've been
yes.
there. Yeah.
Yes. So if you open the book, the first thing you'll see is the stats, the RPG stats of the characters, and it's not like from a D&D page, but it's definitely a character sheet, and they're hysterical.
Okay.
They're so well done, and this isn't, I mean, it is a fantasy book, but it's like weird stuff happening to people in current day. So, you know, and the stats they give are just normal everyday stats, but it's really funny. And that, you know, I opened the book after Michael and Evo interviewed him last spring and just saw that character sheet and said, I have to buy this. There's no question.
Okay. But enough about Minister Faust. This,
yes.
This isn't his show. This is about
yes.
Mer Lafferty. So, you know, as someone who's in the trenches too, it's definitely cool. It's definitely a good thing. And I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, you're an intelligent person, you know, and it kind of goes to prove that there's not really this mythical barrier. Like the good ones are all, you know, on the New York Times bestseller, and, you know, all the morons who are just flinging poo around are the unpublished ones. So,
yes.
So cool. I mean, yeah, best of luck. Keep doing such a great job with all that stuff.
Thank you. I will do my best.
Short break. We have a guest, Highbrow Lowbrow, this week from The Computer King. For those unfamiliar with the Highbrow Lowbrow concept, it's kind of like the late great thespian Sir John Gielgud saying, get her done. It's kind of like opera singer Maria Callas burping the alphabet.
Greetings, Deadpan Jack. This is The Computer King, with a little Highbrow Lowbrow in a different way. This time, the lowbrow is going to be the subject matter, and the highbrow is going to be the method of delivery. The method of delivery being Shakespearean prose. The devil came down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal, and he was in a bind, for he was way behind, but he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, then the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what. I bet you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due, I'll bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're going to regret, because I'm the best that's ever been.
Bravo, and thank you, Computer King. He's a name that many of us recognize from his Winging It contributions, but now he's over here at the Deadpan. It's all about community. We are a big, strong community. And that's awesome. And if you have anything that you feel that you would like to contribute, then contact me, jack@jackmangan.com, or go ahead and submit via voicemail, 206-350-TOMI. That's 206-350-8664. Call up with a contribution, or just call with a friendly hello, as the lovely Andrea from Chicago did here.
Hey, Deadpan, this is Andrea. I'm calling because I just finished listening to number 8 with the reigning shogun of Taiwan. I just wanted to comment on, I wonder what it is about Taiwan. I've had 3 friends that I know in my lifetime that have all gone to Taiwan and never left. I wonder what it is about that place. 2 stayed just because they liked it, and 1 stayed because she got married. Well, she went there and decided to stay and then ended up getting married and has never left. I just think that's kind of weird. The other thing I wanted to say was you guys were talking about the music, and I don't know, where I grew up, everyone listened to everything. I don't know, maybe if it's just a Chicago thing, but I've always lived here, and everyone I know has always been really eccentric in their music taste and has liked everything. All right, bye.
Thanks, Andrea. Yeah, there's room in my CD rack for everyone, except Garth Brooks. Back now to Myrrh Lafferty, with her intelligence, wisdom, and charisma scores of 18. Now, this is one of my stock questions, or it's become one of my stock questions, but you have writing, you have multiple podcasts, you have, you know, writing obligations, you have a family. How do you make it all fit? How do you find time to do all this and not go crazy?
I stress out a lot. I miss deadlines for my podcast. I honestly have a very understanding family. My daughter is in preschool 2 days a week, so I get 2 full days to write or do podcasts or whatever. My husband is also a computer geek and also a podcaster, so, you know, saying I need to go into this room for a couple of hours and be alone with my microphone is, you know, something he can understand and respect. Mm-hmm. I have to set priorities. You know, paying work comes first. If I have a magazine deadline, or, you know, I had to put some stuff on the back burner when I was working on the podcasting book, that comes first, and podcasts are pretty important. Well, of course, the family comes first. How much of a Freudian slip is that?
That's understood.
After the family, so, but yeah, and it's really not as much. I think podcasting is more work than the average listener thinks it is, but overall, everything I do, it doesn't take. I feel like it doesn't take a lot of time because I feel like I spend a lot of time being disorganized and stressing when I should just be getting the work done.
Right. When you should just be writing.
Yes.
Sorry. Go on.
No, that's fine. It's said frequently. But yeah, it's difficult at times, but you know, I get it done. And sometimes I just have to I've been letting the Dragon Page, no, not the Dragon Page. I've been letting Winging It slip, which I feel bad about because I still want to be, you know, part of your cool kids club with you guys, and
well, you always are. Don't worry about that.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, I just have to set priorities and decide which comes first, and once I get that done, what comes next. And it's tough. Sometimes I wonder if I'm spreading myself too thin, if I'm spreading out too much, because it's like, you know, Jim Kelly, James Patrick Kelly, has a podcast where he reads his fiction, mm-hmm. and that's all he does. He doesn't have 12 different podcasts talking about writing and theater and fiction. And you know, he focuses. Cory Doctorow, who's got his fingers in more pies than I will ever have, does a podcast where he reads his fiction. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of us, especially in the people you and I know, kind of see podcasting and go, woohoo, what else can I do? What else can I do?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm helping Steve Ely out with the PR of Escape Pod, and just, you know, every time something comes my way, I'm just like, oh, cool, let's do that. And sometimes I wonder if I should focus myself on one thing or another, and maybe that would be really amazing. Like, I definitely think that I'm doing well in a lot of things, but, I mean, success-wise, but, you know, what if I, you know, quit one thing and focused all this energy on another thing, would it just explode? I don't know. But, you know, when I write down everything I'm doing, you know, the fiction and the magazine work and the podcasting, and try to think, what can I cut? Nothing leaps to mind.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I feel like my focus, the way I focus, tends to be shotgun. So I feel like it's a better metaphor than an actual reality of, okay, I'm going to just take all of this energy I'm putting into these 10 different things and put it in one awesome thing. I feel like that's sounds great in theory, but the, you know, in practice, I would just, my attention would still start going off in those other directions. I don't know if it's the same for you.
No, I understand completely. Once I decided to start, you know, saying no a couple of times, when I finished the podcasting book, I thought, oh great, well now I can focus on my magazine work and my fiction and the podcast. And suddenly my head's like, oh, I'm not thinking about the book anymore. Hey, what if we did an award for fiction writers who podcast? Yeah! And I'm sitting here going, no, that's not what I want to think about. I want to think about what I'm working on. The stuff's in front of me. And my brain's like, no, let's do this podcasting thing. Call up Mike Menengay. Yeah! And so, yeah, I think my brain naturally, as you say, that has to do the shotgun approach, because I'd probably get bored otherwise.
Right, well, it's working. I mean, you've got legions of fans, and, you know, you've entertained a lot of people in a lot of different ways. So your approach has worked really well.
Oh, good.
Well, let's wrap up then. Tell us a little bit about that experience of being not just a woman in sci-fi fandom, but, you know, being a woman in the sci-fi field, a creative force in the world of science fiction.
I don't know. I've been thinking about this. I've been, you know, really just trying to get my brain around it. I've been pretty lucky a lot in that I haven't encountered anybody in the RPG field who treats me any differently because I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. I haven't found anybody in... Nobody at... one person at the Origins Games Convention looked at me funny. I sat down to play in a tournament. Not just learning how to play a game, but a tournament. Mm-hmm. And the guy sat down across from me and asked me if I knew how to play the game.
I see.
But,
right.
You know... And all my gaming groups have been mixed with men and women. So it's hard for me to say. I mean, I'm very, very strongly a feminist. You know, chainmail, bikini, boobs really piss me off.
Okay.
You know, that would pinch. It's not practical. I don't mind people trying to look sexy, but at least be practical.
Yeah, it's really disturbing when Conan starts wearing them, though. That's really...
But, you know, I did a talk at the Podcaster Con at Chapel Hill in January about women in podcasting, and the room was frighteningly divided. I mean, there was a group of women there who go, why do we need this? Why do we want to make ourselves women podcasters? Why can't we just be podcasters? And that, of course, makes me wonder. On one hand, they have a point, but on the other hand, there are always going to be not always. I hope there won't always be. But, you know, there are a lot of women who think that's tech, that's a guy's thing, that's not for me. That's sci-fi, it's stupid, there's no good sci-fi, it objectifies women, blah, blah, blah. Or it's all about spaceships and hot alien chicks. And, mm-hmm. You know, you want to reach out and say, look, I'm a woman, and it's not like that.
Really?
It's not all like that. Not all of it, Jack. Maybe in your world it is, but...
Sorry, go
on.
And
so, you know, it's like I don't want to ghettoize myself and say, I am a woman podcaster, I am a woman gamer, I am... I'm just trying to think of how to have a happy medium and say, you know, I am all of this, and I would be happy to teach any other woman that, you know, come on in, the water's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, I want to be invited to the overall podcasting talks instead of the women podcasting talks. And, you know, I heard Octavia Butler talk about how she refused to do any more women of color talks anymore, women of color in sci-fi talks anymore, because she's like, I've said it. I've already said everything that needs to be said. Why can't I be on the generic sci-fi panels?
Mm-hmm.
And that really struck a chord with me. So right now I'm kind of in the middle. Like, do I want to be called a female podcaster, or just come on? I'm a podcaster, or a gamer, or sci-fi, or whatever. So that didn't answer your question at all. But
well, I agree, and I definitely hope you don't think I meant like, oh, you're a chick. You know, you don't belong this. But I was just wondering if your experience had been any different. Because one day when you mentioned how you had there have been geeks historically who've said, oh, women don't belong in playing RPGs and things like that.
Yes, but historically there have been, but my personal life has been very. Very lucky, I guess. I don't know. I've heard there was a big thing in Knights of the Dinner Table, to mention the magazine again, a big debate about women gamers. Like, some guys saying, you know, we don't want them at our table. We're a guys' club. And other women are just like, don't be so sexist. And some guys are like, look, we invited women, and they cried when their character died. And just a big, big mess. And, you know, I guess my feeling is, actually, I wrote an essay about this. It was just basically, don't be an asshole.
Yeah, I remember that essay. Yeah, that was a good one.
If you're a guy and a woman wants to game, don't be an asshole. And if you're a woman who wants to game, don't be an asshole. So, you know, if people were just that's like the one rule. If you just follow that one rule, life would be so much easier.
Don't be an asshole. Yeah, that should be, we should have billboards of that everywhere you go. So you just see that, you're constantly reminded of that just all over the country. I'm all for that.
Yeah, but no, I don't think you were talking to me about, hey, you're a chick, tell us. No, not at all.
Right.
It just has been something that's been on my mind pretty much ever since that panel when I'd lost my voice, and I sounded like shit, and I'm in front of a group of people trying to talk about women podcasting, and I have women in the audience saying, we should not do this. This talk shouldn't even be here. And they weren't, like, heckling me. But, you know, when I brought up the topics, they were just like, look, we shouldn't ghettoize ourselves, blah, blah, blah. And for one thing, I was extremely uncomfortable about it. And, of course, afterwards, all my friends were like, wow, that went really well. I'm like, what? Were you with the same talk I was? But, no, it just got me thinking. And I understand, I understand both sides. And all it does is confuse me more. Like, yeah, if you're a woman and you want to know about podcasting and you're intimidated by the guys, then by all means, I'll tell you about it. No problem. But if you're a woman and you think you can do it, then by God, go ahead. Rock on.
All right. Well, this is probably a good place to leave off. And thank you very much for coming on The Deadpan. And go ahead and give one more shout out to all of your stuff. You can run through the list of things people need to check out.
Okay. GeekFu Action Grip at geekfuactiongrip.com. I Should Be Writing at ishouldbewriting.com. Tricks of the Podcasting Masters. Just search for either my name or Tricks Podcasting Master, whatever, on Amazon. See, now's where I start to forget. Knights of the Dinner Table magazine is on your comic book shelves, maybe at your friendly local gaming store as well. I need to write all these down. Oh, I did. I edited an anthology of patio book stories called Voices New Media Fiction, and that's on patiobooks.com, along with Spherical Tomy, Spherical Tomy, Spherical Tomy.
That's right.
And, yeah, please check out Heaven, which is on Geek Fu Action Grip, but it's dear to my heart, so I have to mention it again.
Okay.
Can I do one thing, Jack?
Yeah, go.
Can I just say one thing?
Go right ahead.
Because I was listening to a previous podcast, and I hear you're taking on the Cinema Boobies mantle since Michael and Evo have shrugged it off.
Oh, I'm not taking it on. It's just that's where it was. But go ahead. If you have something to say about it, go right ahead.
Well, see, yeah, no women are telling their Cinema Boobies story.
Okay.
I went over to a slumber party at a friend's house, and her grandmother was sitting us, and she turned on Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Okay.
And that was, well, surprisingly, there weren't a lot of boobies in it, it being a movie about a whorehouse.
Was that the, like, Dolly Parton movie?
Yes.
Okay.
But she wasn't the boobies.
Right.
Thank God, that would have scarred me for life. But no, yeah, that was my first Cinema Boobies, a very confused little girl watching Best Little Whorehouse in Texas at a friend's slumber party.
And how old were you?
I want to say around 10, maybe 11. Definitely earlier than high school.
Okay. Yeah, that seems to be that would probably be the most common age. Well, I'm strange. I don't know what I am. I'm honored or flattered or disturbed, or I'm not sure what I am, but I'm glad you chose my podcast to as the outlet for your first Cinema Boobies experience.
Oh, well, you're welcome, Jack. I hope you sleep well tonight.
and also one other, I guess one more comment I wanted to make is that it seems earlier in the podcast I got the sense that I Should Be Writing jokes are no longer funny.
That it's tough. It's real tough because it's such a great title, and I can say that because I didn't come up with it. T. Morris did.
Okay.
But I didn't expect everyone to be saying it to me all the time. And seeing as how people who usually say it to me have just written at least two paragraphs about how much they love it and how much it started them writing, I don't really feel comfortable saying, stop it already! Let's just say that I've heard it before. And if you want to say it, that's fine. But if you want to say it because you think you're being original, God, I'm starting to sound like a real bitch here. No, yeah. People saying I should be writing to me is fine. Right. Oh, God.
But henceforth, I shall never use, I should be writing as a joke for you ever again. So.
No, no, you're fine, Jack. You're fine. Oh, God.
Okay. Well, leaving the guests feeling uncomfortable is the perfect way to end an interview.
Yay!
So everyone, check out I Should Be Writing, Geek Foo, Knights at the Dinner Table, Voices, the Patio Book, and everything else with World of Warcraft role-playing games and everything else you can find that has Mer Lafferty on it. And thank you for coming on, Mer. It was a great interview, and it was a pleasure having you.
Thanks a lot, Jack. You're a lot of fun to talk to, deadpan as you are.
You heard it from Mer Lafferty. Don't be an asshole. And by the way, her husband's podcast can be found at www.thevintagegamer.net. He covers classic video and board games. Pre-Settlers of Catan, pre-Quake. Very good stuff. Wow, look at the time. This has been a long episode, but there's just been so much content sent in by you guys. So let's keep that up. Keep sending more stuff. Gonna take you out with music, as always. We're gonna pass the 50-minute mark, but that's all right. The song is called Love Temple. It was actually our very first trip into a professional studio. Super long intro, so I can talk over it a little bit. There's lots of soloing, so, you know, this got to be one that live I really had a lot of fun sinking my teeth into. Ah, yes, those were the days. And you'll probably recognize 7 seconds in the middle there from the beginning of every Deadpan episode. Well, I'm out. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, everyone, for being here and being part of the community. Deadpan is the way.
www.jackmangan.com.